Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Dr. Russell Blaylock. Hi, Russell. How are you doing?
Just fine, Dr. Monteith. Appreciate the invitation.
Well, it's good to have you with us again. And tonight we were going to talk, about vaccines?
Well, I thought we would kind of touch on several subjects, but what you find is that vaccines seem to come up in all these subjects.
Well, you go right ahead then.
Well, basically what we know about vaccines is that in modern times we're just giving way too many vaccines. It's become such a tremendous business. They're making absolutely billions off the vaccine production and implementation, spreading this all over the world. So the pharmaceutical companies are making a huge profits out of this. Now, what's happening is they're creating so many vaccines. They want to vaccinate against totally benign diseases like chickenpox. Diseases that are not any real danger to most people, like the herpes, like the hepatitis virus vaccine. So we're just crowding this vaccine schedule. So the children are getting about 33 different injections before they start school. And that's a tremendous amount of injections. And what people need to realize is that when you give a vaccine for a disease, it's like producing that disease in the, that child temporarily. It's not the full-blown disease, but it's enough so that the body is acting as if it has become significantly sick. Now, what's frightening about that is that as we learn more about what happens when you get sick, is that your immune system activates rather intensely. It's trying to kill off this invader very quickly. But with vaccines, because there's not an invader to actually kill in many cases, because you're using dead viruses or germs in many cases, and you're using powerful immune activators like aluminum and aluminum complexes, what happens is you turn on that immune system and it can't turn off. And we now know that with these immune activators, the immune system stays in this hyperactive state for as long as a year and possibly 2 years. Now, connected with this is when the body's immune system is in this state of hyperactivity, the brain's immune system turns on. The brain has its own separate immune system. And when the brain's immune system comes on, it's very critical that if it's going to fight an invader, it gets the attack over very quickly, because you're dealing with an immune attack in a very delicate organ. All these connections and cells are very, very delicate. So every time we get sick with a virus, some brain cells are damaged, some connections are damaged, but they're quickly repaired once we get well. But with the vaccine and this inflammatory reaction going on in the brain for months or years, this chronic ongoing inflammation in the brain produces what we call neurodegeneration. And that is the destruction of connections between brain cells and actual loss of brain cells themselves. And this has all been proven in many studies. And we find that when you start overcrowding a vaccine schedule, where a child comes in and receives as many as 5 to 7 inoculations at one sitting, you're really producing an intense activation of the brain. And most mothers know that when they bring their child and have these vaccines, a lot of time the child is crying and carrying on and screaming at the top of his lungs all night long, and there's not much you can do to stop that. We used to be told that by the pediatricians, well, that's just because it's painful and the pain will subside tomorrow and everything will be fine. But sometimes these children cry for 3 or 4 days or a week.
And you think that's really because of the inflammation of the brain?
Right, and we now know that because what happens is what's called sickness behavior. And this is that the brain's immune system is so active, it's secreting toxic compounds called cytokines, and this is what produces the intense screaming and crying and behavioral discontrol that these children undergo. Knowing this, now that we have a handle on this and we understand the pathophysiology, actually what's happening in the brain with vaccination, when you're just giving so many inoculations one after another, it's producing significant damage to that brain. And so when we look overall throughout the United States since this policy has been started, we see about a 600% increase in neurodevelopmental problems in children. That is, all the way from the most severe, that is autism, to ADD, ADHD, and just language problems, behavioral problems, learning problems. And all of this has been documented in a number of studies, that these increases in these development disorders in these children is quite real. And it increased at the very time that they started having these children injected with so many vaccines. The mercury in the vaccine makes this even worse because we know mercury is a toxin to the brain in extremely, extremely small concentrations. And that the amount of mercury that's placed in these vaccines, particularly when they get 33 inoculations, far exceeds what we know the toxic level in the brain, so that the children were getting as much as 100 times higher dose in their brain than was considered acceptable. So the mercury toxicity and the immune overactivity together produces a considerable amount of damage. Now, the reason some children develop autism and some develop...
Hold that thought there for just a minute, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Blaylock is saying that basically what happens when you give these vaccines, because of the boosters that are there, they last for a long period of time, and you tend to get a continued inflammation of the brain. Initially, sometimes children will cry for days after the injection. It's a reflection of the inflammation that comes simply because of the vaccinations and the immune enhancers in the vaccines. And then, of course, the mercury, even a very small amount of mercury in the vaccines, will create problems. And some of these children are getting 100 times more of mercury than they should for their weight. But then Dr. Blaylock was going to tell us why some children develop the autism and others don't. Why don't you pick up the story there, please?
Right. If we look at the whole spectrum of these children, some develop this severe reaction, some a milder reaction, and all in between. The reason that some children are so devastated by these injections is because their body, number one, has insufficient protective antioxidant enzymes. Sometimes it's because they have poor nutrition. They're deficient in nutrients that we know that protect the brain against these reactions. Sometimes it's hereditary. We know that the child will inherit weaknesses that make their brain more susceptible to this type of damage. And so if you run this whole gamut from very resistant to it to very susceptible to it. Unfortunately, we're giving so many vaccines now that a large segment of the population is developing this brain damage. Now, we also see the same thing in adults, where this is not just limited to children. And with this insane policy of encouraging people over 50 and age 55 to get yearly vaccines for influenza, and now with the new policy, they want pregnant women to get the vaccine, they want children from age 6 months to 18 months to get the vaccine, and now they want them even in teenagers to get the vaccine every year. So virtually, they're saying the mass of the population should be getting these influenza vaccines every year. Well, most of these vaccines still contain the mercury, and it's producing this abnormal immune stimulation every year in these people. Now, a couple of research projects have really raised a caution flag here. And one is that people who are susceptible to developing either Parkinson's disease or Alzheimer's disease, they find out that if they develop an infection somewhere in their body, that it greatly accelerates that Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's disease. That is, it comes on earlier, it progresses faster, and they're more likely to develop the full-blown deterioration. Knowing that, the same effect will happen with vaccines. That is, if you vaccinate somebody, it's even worse because the immune boosters, these adjuvants, stay inside the tissue, constantly stimulating the immune system for over a year. And so that this entire process is going on for that whole year. And then next year you get another vaccine and the whole process starts over again, plus the accumulation of the mercury in the brain, because the brain accumulates mercury much higher concentrations than most tissues. Now, there's a study done by Dr. Fudenberg, which indicates that people over age 55 who get the flu vaccine every year for 5 years in a row increase their risk of developing Alzheimer's disease over tenfold. This is a tremendous increase in Alzheimer's risk for a vaccine that really doesn't even offer any protection against influenza anyway. And because it can suppress your immune system, it actually can make some people more likely to develop the flu, and if they develop it, it's much more difficult for them to get over it. It persists for months and months. When that happens, then they're more likely to develop Alzheimer's disease as well, because it's destroyed in their immune system, causing part of it to be overreactive, part of it to be underreactive. So we have a tremendous amount of research now. I'm talking about literally hundreds of studies that prove this connection between overstimulation of the immune system and the changes in the brain that we see with Alzheimer's disease. And it's almost beyond question now. Most authorities in the field of Alzheimer's research agree that Alzheimer's disease is a chronic inflammatory disorder of the brain that is triggered by the immune system.
Is that why they lay down those amyloid plaques in the brain?
Right. Anytime you injure brain cells, it'll produce amyloid plaques, whether it's mercury, aluminum, viruses, infections.
How about fluoride? Does fluoride play any part in this?
Well, we don't know that fluoride will produce amyloid plaques, but we know fluoride accumulates in the brain. We know fluoride increases brain free radical generation, and that can trigger excitotoxicity. So from what we know about the effects of fluoride on the brain, it certainly should play a part in it. It is one of the toxins that synergistically is going to be added to these other toxins that can accelerate this disease.
That's the mercury and the aluminum.
Mercury, aluminum, fluoride, cadmium, lead, all of these will add together synergistically to produce damage to these brain connections and in the part of the brain that we see the damage in Alzheimer's disease, and Parkinson's disease.
Okay, fine. Well, certainly, if this, though, is well verified, why is it the CDC is insisting that, we give these shots, immunizations, flu immunizations, to pregnant women when certainly the brain of the child is just beginning to develop in utero? This must be a terribly toxic dose to that unborn child.
Oh, absolutely. Particularly when we know that when you activate this immune system excessively, during that stage of brain development, and you have to realize that the brain undergoes its most intense development in the last trimester of pregnancy in the first 2 years after birth. So during that last trimester, that's when that vaccine is going to produce the most damage in that child's brain. And, what the CDC is doing is just ignoring this huge wealth of scientific studies that shows this connection, that shows this incredible danger. And the whole thing is ridiculous because you're not even protecting the mother from the flu anyway, because the studies have shown that the flu vaccine at best reduces flu in 50% of people. So that it's a very ineffectual vaccine, and you're putting the mother at risk, you're putting the baby at risk, for absolutely no gain or benefit whatsoever, and that's what's so disconcerting. But it all goes back to the money. They're making a lot of money. Every time they add another group of people that should be getting these vaccines, that's hundreds of millions of dollars worth of business. And all they have to do is tell the medical community. The medical community pressures the state and legislatures to make it mandatory for the state, and the next thing you know, in order to get the child in the school, you have to prove that they're getting the flu vaccine every year. And protestations from the parents and from doctors that know about these things is just not going to have any effect because they have all the power.
And really what's so frightening is that Senator Frist wants to get legislation through so that if your child is injured from a vaccine, you will have no recourse at all. Once that vaccine has been authorized by the officials in government, why, you have no recourse, even if that vaccine can be proven to have done damage.
And we know that Senator Frist has a very cozy relationship with major pharmaceutical companies,
right,
particularly Pfizer. So we see his reason for trying to protect the pharmaceutical companies who are his friends. You know, there's a financial connection there.
Well, we have some of the finest politicians in Washington, D.C. that money could buy. So I think it's really a criminal activity what's going on. And the tragedy is the average doctor really doesn't know what Dr. Blaylock is saying. He does not have the time to do the research. Russell does the research, has all the material and information to document this, but he doesn't have an opportunity to get that information out other than to his excellent newsletter. And we'll tell you later about the monthly newsletter that he writes, which I look forward to every month when it comes. You pick up the story from there, Russell.
Right. You know, what the pharmaceutical companies have done, they've realized that this is a bonanza, that there's this process that they can go through to increase their profits exponentially. And that is, number one, they make an announcement through their friends in the medical centers that a disease process is going to require a certain drug or a certain vaccine in order to protect the public at large, and that we have this huge problem that's facing the medical community, and they have a solution if we can just get all the doctors to jump on board and start prescribing this medication. Another glaring example is this obsession with statin drugs, the cholesterol-lowering drugs. They put out through the medical centers, and a lot of these medical center professors that were leading this charge were people who were either contracting with the pharmaceutical makers of these drugs or receiving some sort of financial benefit from these makers of these drugs. And what they did is then they promoted the cholesterol theory of arteriosclerosis, despite the fact there has been growing evidence over the last 40 years that it's not true, that cholesterol is not the cause of arteriosclerosis. And they just totally suppressed that, overlooked it, and then they promote these drugs. Then the next thing they do, they have all the physicians that are practicing medicine on board. They're listening to their medical societies and to the professors in the medical centers, and they do exactly what they say, write the prescription for statin drugs, and then it's just a matter of putting out the indications. Every diabetic in America needs to be on it, no matter what their cholesterol level, all obese people, all sedentary people, even the children are now to be examined for high cholesterol.
Hold that thought right there, Russell, please. Well, why don't you go along and just pick the story up from there? But it really is disconcerting to realize how the doctors are used. I mean, it's not that the doctors know or understand. They're not profiting from this. But they're told what to do by their medical journals, by their medical organizations, and certainly by the detailed people who come to see them. And they don't have access to the true information out there. And as a result, they're giving their patients bad and very, very costly advice.
Oh, you're exactly right, and this is the problem. It's not that the physicians are in on this. They're the victims, too, because they have been sold a bill of goods. They believe it with all their heart. They think it's the truth, and they think they're doing what's best for their patients. Good example, we had a physician here in town who's a very successful OBGYN doctor, and he came down with a severe coronary artery disease, and had the slightly elevated cholesterol, and he had to retire early. He's only in his 40s. Ended up talking to him and found out that his doctor put him on Liptor. And so asked him, that's associated with severe depletion of coenzyme Q10. Did he tell you to start taking coenzyme Q10? He said, well, no, he never mentioned it. And he said, well, are you going to do it? And he says, no, I trust the cardiologist. I'm going to do what he says. So here's a physician that has the disease, that is a victim of the Liptor cholesterol conspiracy that's going on, and he's just as innocent as everybody else. He's just like his patients. He's taking the drug thinking that that's the thing to do. But what he doesn't know, because he doesn't read this literature, he hasn't delved into this very deeply on his own, he's just taking the word of his medical society and his medical colleagues who are taking the word of their society that this is true. But if you look in the research, you find out that over half the people who have a heart attack or stroke do not have elevated cholesterol. And that has been known for a very long period of time. They chose to ignore it because those people in that 50% group of the population, there's no known drug to treat the reason they have arteriosclerosis, which is four different factors. They either have a high fibrinogen, high homocysteine, high lipoprotein A, or they have fibrinogen, homocysteine, C-reactive protein, and lipoprotein A, the four factors. Those are called independent risk factors. Well, for all these years, the practicing physician just ignored it because there's not a single drug that will treat any of those. But they are treatable by nutrition and changing of the diet. And therefore, you could prevent half of all heart attacks and strokes in this country by nutrition. But drug companies make no money off of it, so it's been a secret. Now, what about the 50% who have elevated cholesterol? Well, the big secret there is, and they've known this all along, was that, in fact, even though it's elevated, it's not causing any problem unless that cholesterol oxidizes. And so when you develop a lot of free radicals, you oxidize the cholesterol, then it's damaging to the wall of the blood vessel. But unless it oxidizes, it's not damaging, even if your cholesterol was in the 300s. Now, this has been proven, and we know a lot of animals, like hibernating animals, they have cholesterol of 1,000. They don't develop their arteriosclerosis like humans. And they eat a lot of berries and things that prevent their cholesterol from oxidizing.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Blaylock is simply saying that if you look at the cause of coronary artery disease, first half of the people who have coronary artery disease and heart attack don't have an elevated cholesterol. So what about them? Well, basically, there are four other factors, and one of them is lipoproteins, one of them homocysteine, one C-reactive protein, and what's the fourth one?
The lipoprotein A.
And then if you do have, elevated cholesterol, it really doesn't do any harm unless you have a lot of oxidation. And, of course, if then you certainly the cholesterol will do problems. So go ahead, pick up the story from there.
We see this is why diabetics have such a high incidence of arteriosclerosis, because we know as soon as their diabetes begins to develop, they start producing just tons of free radicals throughout their body. so their cholesterol becomes oxidized. Now, if you take a diabetic and you control their blood sugar and you put them on antioxidants, then their incidence of heart attack and stroke is no higher than anyone else's. So it's not the fact that you have an elevated cholesterol that's dangerous. It's the fact you're producing too many free radicals. Now, what the research has shown now is that the reason for that is because of immune overactivation. When we look at people who have heart attacks and strokes, all of them have elevated immune factors. One of them called interleukin-6 is particularly high, and sometimes tumor necrosis factor alpha. These are immune chemicals showing that the immune system's overactive. And because the immune system's overactive, it causes inflammation in the wall of the vessel that makes the cholesterol oxidize, and then you develop this arteriosclerosis, or hardening of the arteries. If you lower the immune activity, so you're not getting that intense activity, all of this process starts disappearing, and the arteriosclerosis stops or disappears. Now, this has been done in an experimental setting over and over and over. So more and more research is showing this and proving this. When we look at people who've had heart attacks, those that have the highest immune factors are the ones most likely to die. Those with the lowest immune factors are most likely to survive and have minimal heart attacks. So we now know that the problem is not high cholesterol. The problem is immune overactivation, free radical generation, poor antioxidant intake, and poor nutrition that prevents these free radicals. Yet the medical profession's obsession is, well, we got to get the cholesterol level down. Well, these drugs like Liptor and the other statin drugs, the only reason they reduce heart attack and strokes at all is not because they lower cholesterol, it's because they're antioxidants. They reduce the coagulability of the blood, so they slightly thin the blood. And they're anti-inflammatories, they slightly reduce the inflammation, and they reduce the immune reactivity. It has nothing to do with lowering the cholesterol. In fact, lowering the cholesterol is quite harmful. There's a few studies that have just come out, one of which has shown that people who have the highest cholesterol have the least likely to die of congestive heart failure. People with the lowest cholesterol are most likely to die from congestive heart failure. We see the same thing with stroke reoccurrence. We see the same thing with coronary artery disease. We see the same thing with brain disorders. And people who take in Liptor, if they lower their cholesterol below 200, they begin to have mental problems. They can't think. They can't remember. They have a lot of cognitive difficulties. Some develop total amnesia, become disoriented. Some become suicidal because the brain needs cholesterol for its function. And lowering it that low is detrimental to the brain. They've shown that when the cholesterol is actually higher, mentation is better. People can think better. And they did a study and found that actually when the cholesterol was about 250, the brain was working at its maximum activity. So what we're doing is by tricking everybody into believing they need lower cholesterol, we're impairing their brain, we're impairing their heart, we're impairing a lot of different systems. We're increasing their risk of some very major diseases and disorders associated with these statin drugs. Just to go through the known complications of statin drugs, pancreatitis, amnesia, disorientation, arthritis, post-op wound hemorrhage, toxic drug interaction, worsening of diabetes, mitochondrial damage, erectile dysfunction, dermatomyositis and rhabdomyolysis, which can be fatal. This is what kills some of these people that take statin drugs.
And, Chris, doesn't it actually work by more or less poisoning the liver?
And it poisons the liver, yes. It's a liver toxin.
Right.
It's one of the things they tell doctors, watch the liver because it'll poison it.
And that's how ordinarily the liver is producing the cholesterol. You're suppressing the liver, and that's why the cholesterol production by the liver. And that's why you can actually lower the cholesterol. The figures look good. The only trouble is the patient's getting sicker and sicker. Right. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here with Dr. Russell Blaylock, and please go right ahead, Russell.
Well, one of the ways that statin drugs, the main way that statin drug lowers cholesterol is by inhibiting an enzyme called HMG-CoA reductase. This is the enzyme that's responsible for production of cholesterol in the liver. Interestingly, it's also the enzyme that produces coenzyme Q10, which is used by all your cells to produce energy. It's a very vital energy production molecule. And it's thought that it's because of this severe depletion of coenzyme Q10 that people develop this fatal muscle condition that's killing so many people that take the statin drug. Now, when they first put out the statin drugs, the pharmaceutical companies were well aware of this. They knew that it severely depleted coenzyme Q10 and that was harmful. In fact, they even, in the beginning, included coenzyme Q10 with the drug to counteract that. But then they decided that, well, that would make the public fearful, and so they took it out and they took the advertisements out for coenzyme Q10, and they don't tell the physicians, be sure that your patients get coenzyme Q10 if they're going to take these drugs, because they can develop a fatal condition and they can get worsening of their brain. And there's even evidence that it may worsen Alzheimer's disease or bring on Alzheimer's disease because of this effect. Now, there's a natural product called polycosanol, which is made from the waxy outer coating of sugar cane, which will lower cholesterol slightly, not near to the degree of this drug, has no side effects, even used in massive doses. And they found that it not only lowers the bad cholesterol, but also raises the good cholesterol. The HDL cholesterol is elevated, which statin drugs don't do. They have no effect on the good type cholesterol. The polycosanol also has a lot of other beneficial effects. Lowers triglycerides. It's an antioxidant, anticoagulant. It has been shown to be an anti-cancer drug. Natural product. It reduces fibrinogen level, and that's one of the independent risk factors, and it reduces glucose in diabetics. Remember, statin drugs actually make diabetics worse. It raises their glucose, so it worsens their diabetes. So here's an over-the-counter natural product that you take one dose, 20 milligrams a day, which will give you all the protection from cholesterol that you need, without all the side effects.
Hold that thought. We'll be back. Well, Dr. Stan and Dr. Blaylock is telling us about another medication. It's not a medication, really. It's something you can get at a health food store that actually really does all the right things. It helps as far as your cholesterol is concerned. It lowers the bad cholesterol, increases the good cholesterol, helps the triglycerides, and even lowers the blood sugar in the diabetics. Pick up the story there. And tell our listeners what that product is.
It's polycosanol.
Polycosanol.
P-O-L-I-C-O-S-A-N-O-L.
All right, okay.
You can find it in most health food stores, or you can buy it over the Internet. It's very inexpensive. The dose is 20 milligrams once a day, and it works very well. Now, they've extensively studied this. I think to date they've studied in about 50,000 patients and had excellent results, no complications whatsoever. And in fact, the animal studies, the safety studies in animals, they carried through three generations giving doses that are hundreds of times higher than normal and found no toxic effect all the way through three generations of mice fed it for their entire lifetime. These kind of studies are not done in statin drugs. In fact, statin drugs have been shown, all of them, to produce cancer or promote the growth of cancer. And you'd be interested to know that the new indication for statin drugs, they're telling physicians you need to start checking cholesterol in all children. I'm telling the pediatricians this. And if you find an elevated cholesterol, you can try them on diets, but if it doesn't work, they should be placed on statin drugs the rest of their life. Now, this is from age 6 years, 5 years, for the remainder of their life. Now, all the studies have shown that statin drugs cause cancer. What sense does that make? All the studies have shown that statin drugs are powerful immune suppressants. Now, if you have a child from age 5 that's going to be immune suppressed throughout its life, the incidence of cancer is going to be enormous because we know chronic immune suppression greatly increases cancer risk of all types of cancer, particularly leukemia and lymphomas. So, it's an absolute insane policy, and people who know better are not questioning this. They're just remaining silent because the thunder out there pushing this drug is so enormous. The news media is behind it. That if you stood up and said statin drugs are dangerous and people should not be taking them, they'd look at you like you were crazy. Now, at the maximum effect, they're claiming that statin drugs reduce heart attacks and strokes. Well, the reduction is 31% that they're claiming. Now, if you look at vitamin C and vitamin E alone, multiple studies have been done. It has reduced heart attack and stroke incidence 60%, twice what you see with this drug, this dangerous drug. Yet no one's saying, well, everybody should be on vitamin C and vitamin E, because it seems to work a lot better than the statin drugs and with a lot better safety profile. Now, if you add the omega-3 fatty acids and the magnesium and the other antioxidants, the reduction in heart attacks and strokes would approach 80%. And there's a lot of trickery in the studies that are done with statin drugs. In all of these big series in which they use statins and claim these dramatic 31% reduction in heart attack and strokes, always included patients who had hereditary lipid disorders in which all their lipids were just sky high. Now, that's not something you're going to see in most of the population in the United States. Most of the population in the United States has mild elevation of cholesterol. They're not going to benefit at all from these statin drugs, or if they do, it'll be minor benefits. So that's how they do these studies. They include these really severe cases so they can say, look what success we've gotten. And it's all smoke and mirrors.
Well, didn't they actually do the studies in people that had previous heart attacks? And then they said, in this group, since there was a slightly slower incidence of, or smaller incidence of heart disease or fatal heart attacks, therefore we should treat everybody like this.
Right. This is the kind of trickery they do.
And, of course, these were studies were done all in men, and yet they've extrapolated it to women. There were men up to 55 or somewhere in that age group. And then they extrapolated to women. They extrapolated to the very old and to the very young, and they have no studies there.
Well, right now it's over 67 million people that are recommended to be on statins all the time. They want all diabetics, no matter what their cholesterol level is. That's 18 million people. They want it in the children, they want it in all obese people should take it, according to them. All postmenopausal women should be on it. All hypertensive people should be on it. So you're talking about this enormous percentage of the population on a drug that we know has these serious complications. It's the most insane thing I've ever seen. It's like a bad movie. And people need to wake up and say, I'm not listening to this nonsense anymore. They need to listen to these danger calls that are out there saying, look, this is what's known. They don't even deny it. The drug companies aren't going to deny that these complications exist. I mean, you've seen it on the TV. The patients who were 30 years old, 35 years old, went to their doctor, had a slightly elevated cholesterol. They were doing just fine. Put them on Liptor. Now they're crippled. They can't work. They can barely get out of bed because it destroyed their muscles. And these cases have been repeated time and time again. But no one's saying, look, we've had enough of this. It's a repeat of the vaccine policy. And it's because the vaccine saw how successful that was. So now let's do it with the statin drugs, and the new thing that they're working on is the sleep medications. You've seen this Lunesta drug that's come out with the glowing lunar moth and the advertisement on TV. there's now this massive problem in America of sleeplessness. And therefore, we need to medicate all of these people to help them sleep. Well, ironically, and this is what my new newsletter is going to be about, is insomnia. And the studies are showing that in every case of insomnia, what you see is overactivity of the immune system. Normally, there's this circadian wave of immune cytokines that has to do with sleeping and waking cycles. And what we find in people who have insomnia is that their cytokine levels are too high when they should be very low, that is, when you're sleeping. And so here you're vaccinating people, raising their cytokine levels, and you wonder why so many people are having problems with insomnia. Also, if you add aluminum ammonium sulfate to a diet, it produces a dramatic increase in one of these immune cytokines called tumor necrosis factor alpha. Well, that's what's added to drinking water in every municipal water system, is aluminum ammonium sulfate. When you combine it with fluoride, it's even more toxic. So we have all of these factors working together to create this enormous problem of insomnia, but rather than look at the causation, we go to a drug that the drug companies can make you a fortune off of, sitting here, take this every night and you can sleep. But what happens, and they've shown this conclusively, is that the underlying cause, this immune overactivation, is not cured just by making somebody sleep, giving them a drug. And therefore, they're developing arteriosclerosis, degenerative brain disorders, diabetes, and all these other terrible diseases, because no one's looking at curing the cause of the insomnia in the first place. They're just treating the symptoms.
Well, I know years ago we used to give L-tryptophan, and it seemed to do a very, very good job with a lot of people. And now, of course, you can't even buy that in the United States.
Well, we had several other good natural products. The gamma-hydroxybutyric acid, GHB, was one of the best products ever known, and still is, for narcolepsy. Yet it was outlawed because certain ne'er-do-wells were using it as a date rape drug. You know, they would put it in women's alcoholic drink and they would fall asleep and then they'd rape them. But is that a reason to remove this useful, natural, safe product for sleep and for treatment of this serious condition, narcolepsy? I mean, that's insane. But that's what happened to the fate of many of these things, is that they work, and they work safely. L-tryptophan, there was problems because it was produced in a Japanese company using a bacteria, and the contaminant from the bacteria caused the problem with L-tryptophan, not the L-tryptophan itself.
And so, you know, it was a defect in the manufacturer, but rather than, correct the defect in the manufacturer, why they just made it totally unavailable, and most of it didn't create a problem. It was just from that one company.
Right. And L-tryptophan is used as a pharmaceutical agent and with complete safety, and that's okay. But you have a lot of natural products like magnolia extract. Plays a part in neurotransmitters in the brain, particularly GABA, the gamma-aminobutyric acid, type neuron in the brain, which calms the brain and produces natural sleep. So people sleep well, they're well rested the next day, feel great. But you see, these are kind of secret products. Now, one of the big problems with these drugs to help you sleep is that we're seeing more and more cases of amnesia. We're seeing people sleepwalking, in which they do mean violent things and have no recollection of it. We see bizarre thinking processes, and the next day, even though they sleep sound throughout the night, the next day they're fatigued. They feel bad. It's like they didn't get a good night's sleep at all. And that's because it's not giving you that slow wave sleep, which is the most restful sleep.
Well, now you mentioned, of course, that one of the big problems with sleeping was this, this inflammation of the brain. What can be done about that? Just antioxidants?
Well, there's a lot of natural products that reduce this inflammation in the brain. For instance, N-acetyl-L-cysteine reduces one of those cytokines. The antioxidants all reduce interleukin-6, which is the number one culprit in insomnia. The DHA, the omega-3 fatty acids, significantly lowered, about a 50% reduction in this omega-6 excess. It can be lowered simply by taking omega-3 fatty acids every day. So you combine all of these things, you modulate this overreactive immune system, and you start sleeping again.
But, of course, they're not doing that. They're just curing it with an expensive pill. Or at least they're getting people to sleep.
You see, they're not even curing it because the interleukin-6 is still high. They're just using a drug to force you to sleep, and this destructive process due to this immune reaction is still going on. It's going on silently underneath, and you're not aware of it. But what they found is that when you're real sleepy the next day after having a bad night's sleep, what makes you groggy and tired and fatigued is the high levels of this immune cytokine, this interleukin-6. That's what gives you that fatigue feeling. It's the same thing that gives you that sense of fatigue and grogginess when you get a viral infection. So that's the effect on the brain. But the scary thing is it's also the very same cytokine that's known to be the most likely cause of arteriosclerosis and heart failure and a lot of other diseases, including cancer. What we're seeing is all these different diseases, there's a central causation here. There's a central problem, and that is immune abnormal function, where part of the immune system is overreacting and producing these processes.
And, of course, that's then why you need the omega-3s, why you need the antioxidants, et cetera.
Right. The omega-3s are excellent at modulating overreactive immune system. So that if you take that omega-3 every day, it calms the immune system down so that it doesn't overreact. They think this why is one of the major reasons it may prevent heart attacks and strokes, because that's the leading cause of heart attack and stroke. That's maybe why it improves diabetes. And so we see omega-3 fatty acids are improving so many diseases, the autoimmune diseases, the arteriosclerosis, the neurodegenerative disease, all improve. And they improve rather dramatically. Well, all those diseases, the common link is that they're all associated with immune overreactivity.
Well, now, those omega-3s come from fish oil, or where do you get them?
Well, you can get pure DHA from algae. And most of it comes from fish. You can get, purified product, but you have to have it purified so that you don't have mercury in it and you don't have pesticides and herbicide residues in it. But if it's purified, then it's quite safe.
Well, if it comes from a major drug company, would it be purified? Would it be, I see that they have the fish oils with vitamin A, something like that.
They claim it's pharmaceutical grade, and if it has a part of pharmaceutical grading on it, it's not real because there's no such thing as pharmaceutical grade omega-3 fatty acids. They don't give that connotation to it. But you can have a high grade, oil. But usually if you're ordering it from a company, if it's a reputable company, you can ask for the testing sheet. They'll send it off to an independent lab and have it tested. And you can get that from the company, and it'll show you exactly the purity from lead and mercury and pesticides, PCBs and things like that that are commonly in these fish oils. The cheaper brands are going to be contaminated, so I wouldn't ever take a cheap brand of omega-3 fatty acids. They could be quite dangerous.
All right, fine. Well, certainly, this is so vitally important that people understand really the disastrous effects of the vaccines. And, one of the strange things is so often I talk to even physicians who are, concerned about vaccines, and they always say, well, I'm in favor of vaccines, but, and you very, very seldom ever hear anybody say, I think vaccines have been a terrible effect. Certainly there's been some beneficial effect, but if you compare the effect with the disastrous results, why the cost of benefit ratio or the risk-benefit ratio certainly is against the use of many of these vaccines.
particularly when you look at the modern studies on the childhood vaccines. And what surprised most of the researchers was that the vaccine really, after a short period of time, is ineffectual. That it didn't last as long as they thought. In other words, they were given the MMR and these other vaccines, they thought the children would have protection the rest of their life. And they found it didn't last 2 or 3 years. And even with boosters, it still didn't last very long. And so we assumed everybody was protected, they were vaccinated as children, but most of America, the vaccine long ran out, and we're protected not because of the vaccine, it's because of other reasons.
Right. Well, I think, hold on, we'll be back here in just a moment with Dr. Russell Blaylock. Unfortunately, we have about 1 in 6 American children who has some sort of a neurodevelopmental abnormality of the brain, and we're talking about from all sorts of learning disabilities and reading disabilities all the way up to frank autism. How did it happen? Well, Russell, why don't you just pick up? We've got 3 minutes before we have to let you go.
Okay, the last newsletter was on what I call sleeper germs, and they're really persistent viral infections. These are in viruses and germs that get in your body. They remain silent, but they're slowly causing diseases over your lifetime. And we've discovered that this is probably occurring a lot more often than we think. For instance, Alzheimer's disease, we find 98% of the public is infected with the herpes virus and carries it with them throughout their life. Those who have a certain genetic makeup called APOE4, if they also have the herpes infection, then they have a high risk of Alzheimer's disease. Chlamydia is a bacteria that's associated with Alzheimer's disease. And what all of these viruses and bacteria are doing when they persist like that is they're making your immune system start producing these immune cytokines, and that's what's maybe leading to arteriosclerosis, insomnia, diabetes, all these different things. Now, the problem is that a lot of these vaccines are contaminated with these organisms. A Japanese study found that up to 50% of the vaccines from 6 different manufacturers were contaminated with different viruses and bacteria. And that when these children are injected, they develop these diseases, or they have this persistent virus. A check of the American manufacturers found pretty much the same thing, that chicken viruses were in many of these vaccines.
Yeah, it's because certainly the measles virus, I think, is grown in chickens, isn't it?
Right. And they found that a high percentage of these vaccines had these viruses growing in them. And the response of the virologist was, well, we have no idea what this will do to people. It'll do anything, but we don't know.
And, of course, the same thing. We get the polio virus. You got all of the monkey viruses. You got 40 or 50 monkey viruses right along with your polio virus.
Right, and a lot of them are contaminated with things like cytomegalovirus. And a recent study showed 93% of people who have vascular dementia have cytomegalovirus in their brain.
And it may very well be from monkeys. Hey, we're just about out of time. Hey, it's been a fascinating, fascinating hour, Russell, and we look forward to having you on our afternoon program. I think it's sometime next week.
Well, I appreciate it, Stan. I look forward to it myself.
Hey, thank you so very much. And our guest has been Dr. Russell Blaylock, and when we get back, right, we'll tell you about the books that he's written. We carry it right here at Radio Liberty. Books like Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients, Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills, all of the books by Dr. Russell Blaylock. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening was Dr. Russell Blaylock, and certainly he writes a newsletter. If you'd like information on that newsletter, you can call us at 1-800-544-8927. We'll be glad to put you in touch with Newsmax, which actually circulates his newsletter. But we have books going along with much of what he said about the drug companies. We carry a book written by Dr. Marshall Angel, formerly editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, the single most influential medical journal in the United States. Dr. Marshall Angel had an appointment at Harvard University. She wrote a book called The Truth About the Drug Companies, And they took out after her and made her life so miserable that she will not do any further interviews on the subject. But the book, The Truth About the Drug Industries, or the Drug Companies, is must reading. And we carry a book on magnesium. We carry a book on statin drugs. You really need to understand what's going on. Of course, we have a four-tape set on statin drugs. We have a four-tape set of my interviews with Dr. Blaylock on life-saving secrets. And all of this information you need to know. But if you're going to get perhaps one book, let me suggest Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, because it will. It is certainly one of the finest books. We use it in my own home. My wife uses that as a sort of a Bible, because they disguise so many of the things that they're putting into your food, your ready-prepared food. For instance, the MSG products, they will give you false names for it. Now, MSG is an excitotoxin that destroys the brain, just exactly as NutraSweet and aspartame, and they put that in, of course, to childhood foods, into baby foods. They put it into everything, and these all are destructive to the brain. You need to understand what's going on, and you need to really listen to Dr. Blaylock's advice. Understand that the statin drugs do far more harm than they ever do good, and there's very little evidence that lowering the cholesterol does anything at all other than produce mental problems, increase the chance of rhabdomyolysis, lower the coenzyme Q10 and lead to congestive heart failure. And if you haven't heard our discussions, we have a four-tape set on statin drugs. You need to get the information. You need to get the book written by Sean Shane Ellison on the statin drugs. You need to understand how they're poisoning the American people. And then you need to really understand the background of the vaccines. One of the greatest scams of all time. We have four tape sets on vaccination, and you need to understand that the long-term results of these is to produce continual inflammation in the brain with progressive degenerative changes, and you wonder why it is that when American children graduate from high school and are tested in comparison with children from other countries, why our kids are at the bottom of the barrel. We can't compete with other children from other countries. Certainly, there's so much evidence out there of the deleterious effects of the vaccines. We actually have a little pamphlet on genetic engineering, and we put together the statistics, government statistics, on to show you just what childhood vaccines have done. And understand that you're not being told the truth because your doctor doesn't know the truth. You get the facts, you check it out yourself and find out if it could really be true, because you're responsible for your family. And if you don't get involved, who will? Remember our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming in from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And we have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because we have with us on the line Ron Brown. And Ron comes on with us every month. And we talk about really what's happening to the finances, to the stock market, to gold and silver. Because we are entering a very, very difficult time financially for our country. Those of you who follow Congressman Ron Paul will recall that this week he gave a speech on the floor of the House of Representatives, and you can get this up on his website, where he talked about the history of our monetary system and how America has used a fraudulent monetary system to actually dominate the world, to give us hegemony over all other nations. This was a really dollar imperialism, as it were. But, of course, this works only as long as other countries have confidence in the United States and want to continue working very hard to produce products to give to us for money that is redeemable in absolutely nothing. What happens when other countries begin to lose confidence in America? What happens when the Muslim world turns against us? What happens when our enemies in Russia and China realize we can be attacked financially? What happens when Al-Qaeda sets out to disrupt the monetary system of this government, and we have people with all sorts of money invested in the stock market, and they're invested in bonds, and they're invested in CDs and annuities and bank accounts and pension funds, and that money becomes worthless? Could it happen? It's happened hundreds of times down throughout history, and if you have an opportunity, I suggest you go to Ron Paul's website. You can simply Google in Congressman Ron Paul, go to his site, and just look for his latest article. It's one of the last two or three articles, a speech he gave on the floor of the House of Representatives, rather lengthy speech, the history of our monetary system, and the fact that he is very, very fearful that as we are planning to go to war with Iran, and he makes this very clear, there's no question we're planning on going to war with Iran. This will have terrible financial consequences for us. The war will probably cost us between Iran and Iraq and Afghanistan between $1 and $2 trillion, money we just don't have. Well, with that as a background, Ron, thank you so much for being with us.
It's always a pleasure, Dr. Stan.
And I'm kind of just as soon as we get back here in a moment, I want to get your thoughts on what's going on. We've seen a totally manipulated stock market, totally manipulated commodity market. We saw a conscious effort to drive down the price of gold and silver and platinum and palladium here about 10 days to 2 weeks ago, and now, of course, they're beginning to recover. But you must understand that we do not have free markets. We have manipulated markets, and if you and I tried to manipulate those markets, we'd go to prison because it's illegal. But the government, working in concert with certain of the large banking industries and mining industries, are manipulating all of these things to influence our perception of what's going on. Well, Ron, why don't you pick up the story there?
Well, you know, I think you hit it on the nose. Illusion is about to be exposed because as the flight out of the dollar continues to accelerate, it gets harder and harder and harder for the monetary authorities to hold this thing together. And I think last time I was on air with you, we gave the example of Russia announcing they were going to double their gold reserves, which means they're going to buy 500 tons of gold in a market that's already running a 1,000-ton-a-year deficit. So as they come in to buy more and more gold, one, they have to sell something, and typically what they're selling is their dollars, is putting downward pressure on the dollar and upward pressure on gold. Yet the monetary authorities are trying to hold the
this thing together, so they come in and attack gold. But as this, as the physical demand for gold continues to advance, then all of these manipulations that they've used to suppress the price then are exposed. I don't know if you heard, but last month or so, Saudi Arabia, for example, had purchased a big slug of silver. I don't know how many ounces it was. But years back, and about a month or so ago, they tried to take delivery of that silver that was stored in London, and they were told that they couldn't get it. So all of a sudden...
Well, they I suppose they were given the money, the monetary value of it, but they couldn't lay their hands on the silver.
Exactly. But, you know, if you bought the silver, you may want to take delivery of the silver. Now, the point I would make is how many people are sitting out there right now with certificates for gold or silver that they have stored in some bank, whether it's in Switzerland or wherever, and they've got to start wondering, is that gold or silver really there? Or have the banks, which work on fractional reserve banking, been doing fractional reserve banking with the gold and silver? And I was reading something just earlier this week, someone going on about the ETF in gold.
Now, explain to our listeners what an ETF is.
Exchange-traded fund, where you basically have a mutual fund set up where people invest their money in the fund, and that money is supposedly used to buy physical gold or silver.
And so they're actually supposed to have that gold or their silver right on hand.
Right. But I would bet a dollar to a dime that they're using the same fractional reserve banking there, and that maybe they have 10 or 15% of the gold on hand to cover the purchases. So, again, that's a way of putting off or covering up the shortage of gold, because you've got 10% covering 10 times that much in demand.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is Ron Brown, and he's talking about how these exchange-traded funds, and they would be simply a gold fund or a silver fund, and supposedly you buy into that fund, and they're supposed to take your money and buy gold and silver with it, so that you're actually holding gold and silver. But that's what most people think when they buy these ETFs, is what they refer to them. But the reality of this is that actually you put your money in, but there's not the amount of gold and silver that you and 100 other people have bought. They may have 15% of that. They're using the rest of that money to invest in other things. It's a fractional system. If the price of gold goes through the roof, why, they have two options. I mean, they have to go out and buy it, but of course at a much higher rate, and it becomes a Ponzi scheme, or they simply skip town with your money and say sayonara. This has happened time and time again. You say, well, they couldn't get away with that. They could if there was a crisis situation, and I believe that we are moving towards a financial crisis situation. In fact, a number of crises will be descending upon America, probably within, whether it's a matter of months or several years, I can't tell you. But I will tell you, I've talked to a number of key people, and they believe we're on the edge of a precipice for so many things, and I'm talking about a nuclear war with Iran, I'm talking about a financial problem, I'm talking about the possibility of new diseases being launched on America and terrorist attacks being launched within America. So pick up the story there, and if we had all these things happening, why, who do you think would go after the people who ran off with your gold and silver, or ran off with the funds you put there?
Well, you know, another example is, for example, American Barricks is one of the largest gold mining companies, and they were the ones that kind of led the charge 20 years ago when they started forward selling their future gold production. And the story I like to tell, and I'm trying to explain how it happened, back in the 70s, when we were having the inflationary blow-off and gold ran to 870, in order to try to stop the gold from rising, in November of 1978, President Carter came out and announced that they were going to start auctioning gold off. And when they announced that they were going to auction gold, the price collapsed like $3 in 2 days.
In other words, the American government, the Treasury Department, was going to begin to sell our gold to drive the price down.
Right. Now, what happened is it backfired on them. When they made the announcement they were going to auction, then the price collapsed. But then each month after the auction and the dust settles and everyone looked and say, my gosh, they offered 2 million ounces and there were bids for 10 million ounces. So then gold would rise very quickly right after the auction. So after the third or fourth auction, I don't remember exactly how many they had to cancel that because it was drawing attention to the demand for gold, and it had accomplished just the opposite of what they wanted to. So this time around, they couldn't expose what they were doing. So in my opinion, what they were doing is going to companies like American Barricks, who at the time was producing somewhere around 5 million ounces of gold a year. And the example I give is, pretend for just a second, Dr. Stan, that you're the CEO of American Barricks. And I give you a call, and I tell you I'm from Morgan Chase or one of these international bankers, and I say, I've got something I need to share with you. And since we're the bank that usually provides you the credit for your mining operations, you're going to listen to me, anything I have to say. So I come out to see you, and I say, let me explain something to you, Dr. Stan. The central banks are totally committed to holding the price of gold below some price, and let's say at the time it was approaching $400 an ounce. And any time the price of gold tries to rise above that point, here's what they will do, and he gives you a whole litany of the things that they can do to suppress the price of gold. Now, assuming you're convinced that they have the power to do that, as the CEO of a gold mining company, what do you know? The best price you're going to get for your gold for the foreseeable future is $400, right? So then they say, by the way, the central banks or the bankers are willing to loan you, I think in American Barracks this is what they said, up to 10 years of your future production, and we'll loan you that gold at 1 to 1.5%. And so let's say you decided to take 1 year's production, borrow that 5 million ounces of gold, you sold it into the market. If gold was at 400 and you sold 5 million ounces, that's $2 billion. You then invested that money in bonds or T-bills, and interest rates were coming down, so you were probably getting an 8, 10, 12, 15% return on your money. Now, that's a very profitable adventure you just went into, but what did you do? You dumped gold into the market to suppress the price, which made you look brilliant because you sold your gold at 400, and now the price is, let's say, at 375. So just like the Orange County thing, you're looking real good for a period, but at some point that has to end because you can only drive gold so far before it finally ends. Now, at one point, American Barricks was sold forward 13 years of their future production. Today, they're short 13 million ounces. They just merged with Placer Dome, so the combined short position of those two companies is 21 million ounces. They lost $560 million on their short position in one quarter last year. So that's another one of these frauds or this manipulations that has now come into the surface, because there's no way they can go into the market to repurchase the 13 million ounces that they need to cover what they've sold previously. In order to do that, they would drive the gold price of gold through the roof. So the thing is really getting close to a convulsions. It's going to just throw this thing.
Well, it was very interesting. You know, one of my favorite commentators is Arne de Borgrave. I don't know if you know him, but I've been following his career for 30 years since he was the chief foreign correspondent for Newsweek magazine during the Vietnam War. Now he writes for the New York Times. He was talking about the coming war with Iran and just casually commented that when we have this coming war with Iran, gold will go to $1,000 an ounce. Now, Arne de Borgrave, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, he's an insider's insider. I don't think he's a bad man. I don't think he's a conspirator at all. I think, though, he is a very careful observer of what's going on. And when he makes a casual comment in a recent article that gold is going to go to $1,000 an ounce, I would give some credence to what he says.
And if it does that, then look at all of these forward sales and these short positions of the derivatives. See, it'll blow that out of the water. And so that's where we have a climax coming in this whole thing. It's going to be interesting to see how it unravels.
Well, one of the interesting things to me is that Goldman Sachs recently said that they thought the gold would go to $600 an ounce, and yet they have very, very strong short positions. In other words, on one hand, they're saying gold's going to go up. On the other hand, they are, by their actions, they're suggesting they believe gold is going to go down. What in heaven's name is going on?
Well, you know, you get into manipulating the system, because what they're trying to do is hold the price of gold down to keep their fractional reserve banking system going, and to keep the credibility of the dollar going. And, of course, gold and silver is a barometer of confidence. So they have to, on one hand, manipulate the price of gold to hold it down, and yet they're getting to the point where they can't hold the price of gold down, so they have to pretend, you know, they say they're going to raise their projections for gold to $600. Just last week, one of the big banks in France came out and said they were projecting $950 by this year. So $600 is not very exciting if it's already at $560. It doesn't make you want to rush out and buy some more gold, does it?
Well, I think that we're in for some very exciting times, because I think that we have a financial system that, and this is just my opinion, I'm not a financial advisor at all, but I've been following this for about, 45 years, something like that. And really what we're beginning to see is the beginning of the implosion of a fiat money system that is totally dependent upon confidence on America. How else could you get people all throughout the world to work hard to produce goods, whether they would be commodities or whether they would be finished products, and sell them to us for paper money that is redeemable in paper money? Or either that, of course, or coming in and buying up American ports. And we saw recently, apparently, that the company in Dubai now has bought out the rights to manage six of our major ports in this country. Of course, China wanted to buy up Unocal, Union Oil Company of America. Our government would allow them to, Canada. So China's going up into Canada, buying up oil there. They're coming into America. They bought up a number of corporations and other companies. The countries and individuals that have large numbers of dollars are simply buying up America. Warren Buffett commented on this recently when he pointed out that foreigners and foreign countries own $3 trillion more of America and American products than we own of their country or their products. And he said, you know, actually $3 trillion now, but if this trend continues, they can pretty soon be up to $15 trillion owed here in America. That's the value of the entire American stock department. Our stock holdings, the entire American stock is $15 trillion, and they're one-fifth of the way towards that. And he says he thinks we're in real trouble as a nation, and I think Warren Buffett's a pretty smart guy.
I would say so.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Ron Brown as we begin analyzing what's going on. We've seen here an example in the last couple of weeks of an organized effort to topple the price of gold and silver, to drive it down, to do away with expectations. But when you understand that there is a conscious, organized effort on the part of our, certainly our Federal Reserve System and our Treasury, to manipulate our reality by manipulating the stock market values, this is not a free market, it's a manipulated market, by manipulating gold and silver and commodity prices. But one of these days, will they lose control? We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, Ron, go ahead and pick up the story there.
Well, you mentioned China and buying out all of our assets. They own or have $800 billion of foreign currency reserves. Most of it is in dollars. So they're sitting there watching their investment in dollars devalue as the dollar is devalued in the world markets. So obviously they would like to convert those dollars to something of value that's real. So that's why they're going around buying up everything they can. They're kind of like a gigantic Pac-Man just gobbling up everything they can. But all that represents is a flight out of dollars. And as that happens, you know, as China dumps or Russia dumps, or I heard Iran and Syria have both converted their dollars to euros. As they dump those dollars into the market, then if they were allowed to go into the market unwanted, then the bond market would crater, for example. If the bond market craters, then interest rates, by definition, go up. And if interest rates go up, what happens to the economy? The carrying charge of this massive debt we're trying to maintain. So the whole, plus the real estate bubble, what would happen to it? And so the whole economy would go down the tube, so they can't allow that to happen. So obviously what is going on is that the Fed has to step in and monetize that debt. In other words, run the printing press and create new dollars to buy back the other dollars that are being dumped into the market, which is just inflating the currency markets, further devaluing the dollar.
Well, you know, it's really very interesting. It was just within the last 10 to 12 days that Syria announced that they were moving their currency out of dollars into euros. Now, why are they doing that? Because they anticipate that they're going to be attacked. What people don't understand is that there is a treaty between Iran and Syria. And if Syria is attacked, Iran has to come to their defense. If Iran is attacked, Syria has to come to their defense. But there are also treaties between Iran and other countries, and I've heard some talk of treaties between Iran and Russia, so that if one of them is attacked, the other one has to come to their to the defense. What in heaven's name are we doing now? Iran is pulling all of their money out of European banks because they know if there's going to be a war, that their funds in European banks will be simply frozen. They won't be able to have access to them. They've got many billions of dollars over there. And so they're beginning to pull their money out of European banks and deposit in Arab banks throughout the Muslim world. Now, what that then does is cut back dramatically on the amount of money that's available for European banks to loan, because they have a fractional banking system, and you take, say, $1 billion out of the banks there, it means they have to contract their loans about $10 billion, probably a 10-to-1 ratio. And so this is going to have long-range financial implications as far as the economy of Europe is concerned. But my fear is that if we, go to war with Iran and with Syria, why, we're going to turn the whole Muslim world against us, and they're going to do everything they can to attack us economically, and I think we are very vulnerable economically. We are the biggest debtor nation in the history of the world. In other words, we are totally dependent upon other countries to lend us money to keep going. And now the president is asking for more money. Are they going to have to raise the federal debt level? Our deficits, trade deficits, were over $728 billion, close to $750 billion this last year. And where is the outcry from our leaders? Well, they say it's going to get better in time. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Ron Brown, and we're talking about what's happening and the manipulation of the markets to change our perception of what's going on, because when the market's going up, we feel good. When the market's going down, we feel bad. They know how to manipulate our reality and our emotions. Go ahead, pick up there, Ron.
You know, when you mentioned Iran, it kind of reminded me of what happened back in 1979. If you recall, the Shah was in charge at that time. And during that period, Shah was a friend of America. And he was, I heard the figure, Iran was putting $85 million a day into Chase Manhattan Bank alone. That's a massive amount of money that's coming into the bank, one bank, and that's what was, you know, Chase Manhattan was then using that money to go out and make loans to recycle the petrodollars, and so, because the price of oil was going up so much. But when the Shah was kicked out and Khomeini came in, he immediately says, we're no friend of America, so we're going to start pulling our money out of the U.S. banks. And that's, of course, when we had the Iran hostage situation. I'm sure it was just pure coincidence. But right after the hostages were taken, what happened is the president came out and froze the assets of Iran, just like you're talking about in Europe. And when that happened, Chase Manhattan Bank then froze Iran's assets in their bank. But that triggered, that was when gold went from like 300 to 870 over the next three months. Because it told the rest of the Muslim world, don't put your money in American or Western banks in this case. And so I'm suspect a lot of this money that's coming out of dollars and euros is going to be heading into gold and silver.
And it may very well be why the Saudis wanted to get their silver out of the banks over there in London and found out they couldn't get it because there wasn't any silver. Or they at least wouldn't let them have it. They probably paid them off in dollars. And the Saudis are smart enough to want something that is of inherent value. They understand that a paper money that is backed by absolutely nothing other than the integrity of George Bush is probably not worth that much.
See, all of this, all these malinvestments or whatever have been covered up through sleight of hand and fractional reserve banking, and then something eventually triggers where that is exposed. And, you know, if you just look at the paper money in circulation, what is it, $200 trillion? I'm sure wouldn't even touch it. And yet, $10 billion would buy all the silver in the world. Or $1 trillion would buy all the gold in the world, and it's already spoken for. So you're about to see a panic out of paper money of all types into tangibles and real things, and that's when this thing will just come unglued because there's just not nearly enough gold to go around.
One of the interesting things that Congressman Ron Paul brings out in his latest speech is the fact that in March of this year, at the same time that the Iranians open their bros, where they're going to be selling their oil for euros rather than dollars, at the same time in March of this year, just next month, why the ARF government is going to stop publishing at the M3 level. Now, what is M3? Why, it really reflects the total amount of money that we have created in the course of a year. Ron Paul points out that last year, we actually created over $700 billion new dollars in circulation, almost $1 trillion new money in circulation in one single year. Remember that it took the United States from 1789 until 1989 to accumulate $1 trillion in debt. And, of course, now we're over $8.2 trillion in debt. But they're actually creating new money. And, of course, they're creating it at a fantastic level. They're going to stop publishing the figures because they don't want you to realize, and they don't want the rest of the world to realize, that they're going to massively increase the amount of money in circulation and credit in circulation. Because if the rest of the world realized that we were inflating our currency that rapidly, they'd want to get out of the dollar. So the excuse is, well, it's so difficult to figure out what the M3 is. It would just take us, days and days and days to figure it out. We've been able to figure it out for years, but starting in March, we're not going to publish it anymore. Why would that suddenly be? I think it's because they want to deceive not only the American people, but the rest of the world, the fact that the only way they can keep this whole ship afloat is to keep turn the printing press on full time and try to inflate us out of this problem, and it's never worked throughout history. I don't think it's going to work now. What do you think?
Absolutely not.
Well, I think that you're going to have to watch. I think more and more people are aware of the fact that this is a house of cards, and of course, Alan Greenspan, I think, very wisely got out before the house crumbled around him. I feel a little bit sorry for Helicopter Bernanke. They refer to him that because he said we could always keep from getting deflation. Why, all you have to do is throw money out of a helicopter. That's why they refer to him as Helicopter Bernanke. But when that happens, of course, money becomes valuable. Ron, why don't you just give us your thoughts on what's going on?
You were cut off from him for a second, so I didn't hear what you said. But I would just sum up, you know, since I've been coming on the air with you, Dr. Stan, what has it been, 2-3 years now?
Yeah, just about that.
I've been labeling our whole monetary system as a gigantic Ponzi scheme, that once it reaches a certain level, you must keep it growing. You can never allow it to contract. Just take one example. Let's take General Motors. It's a company that obviously is in near bankruptcy, is in, you know, in real terms it is bankrupt, but if they were allowed to go bankrupt, how many people, how many other corporations would collapse because they're the ones who supply GM? How many investors and pension plans that are invested in GM stock or Ford stock would go down the tubes? How many retired people, I forgot the figure, I saw 300,000, 350,000 retired people at GM who just simply wouldn't get their retirement money. That would throw the whole country into a collapse, just a black hole, deflationary collapse, and obviously they can't allow that. So whatever tries to fail, they have to keep trying to print it, their way out of it. But as they do that, the tiger just keeps chasing his tail faster and faster and faster, and they just devalue the currency at a faster rate. So all I know to tell people is tell your wife to fix you up a big batch of pancakes because the butter's on its way.
Well, I think that's very interesting as we watch General Motors. We see them, of course, cutting 30,000 jobs in America, threatening to cut dramatically back on their pension funds, contracting the number of plants that are here in America. But, of course, they are moving over to China. And what is the biggest automotive manufacturer in China today? Is it the Chinese motor company that's making something called the Chery? That's very similar to the Chevrolet, but they think they call it the Chery, a new car. No, the largest automotive manufacturer in China today and in Asia today is General Motors.
Hmm.
And they're turning out a $6,000 car over there, and they're selling them in China, and they're selling them throughout all of Asia, but you're not hearing about that. And as they're laying off employees here, they're shifting their production facilities to China. There's a book out called The Earth is Flat by Thomas Friedman, who I believe comes from the Council on Foreign Relations. The idea is we're going to have equality throughout the world, equality of income, and soon our workers will be making just like they're making in China. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Ron Brown. And Ron, at this time, I'd like you to get your telephone number out. And I know you've got written some things up there about what's happening financially. And perhaps if people would like to get in touch with you, why they could get in touch with you and you'd send them that treatise that you've written.
Sure. Anyone who'd like to get some more information, just call me at 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561.
All right, fine. And if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Now, certainly we saw this dramatic fall in the price of gold. And what did it do? Was it about $30, $35 it fell there in one day? What happened?
I don't know about one day, but a
couple of days.
It peaked out about 2 weeks ago. Gold was at 578, and it dropped as low as 539. And it's so resilient because I think there's so many buyers out there looking to buy any dip. It's hard for the monetary authorities to orchestrate one of these long collapses in the market like we've had in the past. You know, back in April of 04, was it? They busted silver down like $1.50 in a week. It went from like 8.15 to, actually, it went down more than that. I think it went down as low as 5.50 from 8.15 in just a matter of 2 weeks. And it took months to get back up to where it was. But now they come in and they hit the market with selling, and they create a margin panic, and you have a sell-off one day, but the very next day it comes right back up. So I think there's just too many people out there ready to buy any dip, that while they will continue to fight gold and silver and try to keep it from spinning out of control, I think they're losing the handle on their ability just to suppress it, you know, for any length of time.
And I really think this is true. I think that one reason why they want to discontinue publishing the M3, which is a calculation of the amount of new credit that they've created, not simply money that they've printed, but credit that they've created, they don't want the American people to realize that they're inflating the way the value of their life savings and their pension funds and everything they have that is tied to the dollar. And that is why it's smart money. People like Bill Gates and George Soros and Warren Buffett are simply investing outside of the United States because they don't trust the value of our currency any longer. They realize what happens when a nation becomes totally irresponsible and certainly begins printing money willy-nilly without any regard to the amount of money, how rapidly they're increasing the monetary base. Well, our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you'd like to give us a call. Well, you know, certainly, Ron, what's the response you're getting from people who call you and try to get information on the gold and silver market? Do people recognize what they're doing, the games they're playing, or are they responding as the elite who really run the world would like to have them by panicking when the price falls and, of course, by being elated when the price goes up?
Well, you know, as we go into the second phase of the gold and silver bull market, the average person in the public slowly starts to wake up to what's going on. You see, it would take an absolute fool to pretend that there's no inflation now, where 5 years ago they were coming out and telling you inflation's running 1 and 2%. Well, they may be saying that today, but the average person says, huh, that's not what my life is showing. You know, everything I'm doing is going up 8, 10, 12% a year. So as more and more people wake up to the inflation fears and what's happening to the currency, then they become more receptive to gold and silver as an investment. And, you know, the people that I have a lot of people, in fact, most of my new business comes from people I've been dealing with for years, and they will try to tell their friends about it. But people that are calling me now were first introduced to it, you know, 6 months, a year, or 2 years ago. Now all of a sudden they're slowly waking up. So answer to your question, yes, more and more people are starting to jump on the bandwagon. And as they do that, then it becomes harder and harder to control the price because there's just too many dollars out there ready to trace very little gold and silver.
Well, now, what about the silver? You know, of course, most of the silver that people hold is in the form of junk silver, 90% silver coins. Are there plenty of these out there, or is there any relative shortage of them?
That's an interesting question because there's not very many of them out there. But the demand hasn't been strong enough to expose that shortage. I kind of liken it to going into a hardware store in let's say, August or September. It's 85 degrees outside, and as you walk down the aisle, you look up on the shelf, and you see one snow shovel. And it kind of goes through your mind, I wonder if that's all the snow shovels they have, or do they have a much more in the back? But who really cares? It's 85 degrees out there, right? A month later, you get that first 10-inch snow, and everyone comes in to buy a snow shovel, and guess what? That was the only one. And that's what the silver market is. There's so little silver out there that when the trigger mechanism hits, and I'll give you an example. In January of 1999, when we were getting ready for Y2K, the first 2 weeks of January 99, the first trading day, I could buy silver bags at $3,800 a bag. 2 weeks later, as everyone jumped on board to try to buy a bag to get ready for this potential banking crisis, there wasn't enough bags to go around, and the price of those bags increased 57%. It went to $5,800 a bag in 2 weeks when the price of silver had not budged. So I would tell you there's a crisis going to come when the people panic for the exits, try to get a bag of silver, and they're going to find there's none out there.
Well, right now you can get it.
Right now I can get it.
Okay, fine. Well, let's go to Ed, who's calling us in from Idaho. Hi, Ed. What part of Idaho are you in?
Northern part, Coeur d'Alene area.
Okay, fine. Well, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do. I don't know if he's covered this or not, but just how significant do you think this Iranian bourse is going to be? What's going to be the total impact on our dollar?
Well, I think we're coming to a crossroads, a showdown. If we allow it to develop, it's not going to happen maybe overnight, but what it will signal is the acceleration out of the dollar to reject the dollar as the world's reserve currency. Will that happen in 6 weeks or 6 years? I don't know. But it will signal the beginning of the end of the dollar as a reserve currency. And, of course, if that ever happens, then the United States, which needs $2 billion a day of foreign money to come in to finance our folly, we're going to find that foreigners are no longer willing to fund it because they don't need those dollars like they did before.
And so it basically one of the strengths of the dollar was the fact we had an agreement with the Arabs that people would have to have dollars to buy oil, and oil was denominated in dollars. Once, of course, the idea comes that you can buy oil with anything, you don't need dollars anymore, there'll be less demand for dollars. And once, of course, there's less demand for anything, the price falls because there's really nothing behind the dollar other than the confidence in the integrity of the morality of the leaders of this country. So I think that this is simply a symptom of this everything that's going on today. But I really am very, very concerned about the implications of an American attack on Iran. And you can just see this thing lining up today as we're, oh my goodness, we're getting the permission of Russia and China to take Iran to the United Nations, and we're going to say that they're not cooperating and that they're going to become a threat to America and to the rest of the world. This is like exactly what we did before we went to war with Iraq. I mean, it's like deja vu all over again. Oh, Iran is a terrible threat to America. We've got to get to them before they attack the United States. Well, I do not believe that for 1 minute that Iran would attack the United States or would attack Israel unless they are first attacked. If they were first attacked, I will tell you they're far stronger than Iraq, and they also have terrorists. Cells right here in the United States that are waiting for the word is given, and heaven help us if those are ever mobilized. We have left our borders open intentionally, and tens of thousands of Islamic terrorists have been allowed to come across our southern border into this country. Why would we do anything that stupid unintentionally unless behind everything that's going on there is another agenda? Anything else, Ed?
Yes. How many times face is a fair price for scrap silver?
Right now they're trading at about 6.6 times face, maybe 6.7.
Getting up there.
Yep, it is. Okay, anything else, Ed?
That's it. Good evening.
Bye-bye. Thanks for calling. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Let's go to Roger, who's calling from Nevada. Roger, are you there?
Yes, I am. Yes,
is that Roger from Henderson?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
From Henderson, Nevada called. I have two questions for your guest tonight. Very interesting. I've been buying silver for the last year, Dr. Stan, and my question for your guest is, do you think silver is going to outpace gold for percentage-wise? I know it did last year. What do you think about this year?
Well, historically, whenever there's a bull market, the gold-to-silver ratio drops down to around 15 or 16 to 1.
Well, I'll tell you what, if gold went to 2,000 and you went to a 16 to 1 ratio, why, that would bring the silver way up into, $300 or $400 an ounce?
Something like that, yeah. So, yeah, I believe the gold-to-silver ratio this time is going to go below the 16 to 1. And keep in mind, it's around 60 to 1 right now. So if it went to 15 to 1, that would be four times the money in your silver investment than you would have made in your gold investment. I personally think the ratio is going to go below 10 to 1 because I think we're living through a 50-year period when 4,000 years of silver accumulation was dumped into the market overnight, and we've been consuming our seed corn for about 50 years. Now we're about to run out of silver, which is the most critical metal in the world right now, not just for monetary but for industrial purposes. And so I think you're going to see, like a pendulum, it's going to swing way the other way. And I think you can see that ratio go down as low as 5 or 10 to 1.
Okay, Roger, did that answer your question?
Yeah, then I'll have one more before I go here. Also, how low do you think silver is going to go? Because, see, today is like about 9-something. It's like about a couple cents off from what it was at the beginning of the week. How low do you think it's going to go and then start to think it's going to go back up again?
Well, I don't have a crystal ball that'll tell me that. I do believe they are desperately trying to beat it back. But every time they beat it back, it's so resilient, snaps right back up. So you can make an argument that they've run out of their ability to suppress it like they have in the past. If silver breaks above 10, I think you'll see it run straight towards 15 very, very quickly.
And one more before I run here. The American Eagles, are those the best type of coins to buy?
I like them. I don't know that I would start with the American Eagle. You pay a pretty hefty premium to get them. although that doesn't bother me too much because I think the shortage of them is going to be prevalent from this point forward. My favorite way to start with silver is just the old pre-65 junk bags, because by definition you can't make any more of those. And as the flight into gold and silver accelerates, then there's going to be a tremendous shortage of those. And I think you'll see them go to a 50-60% premium again, just as they did in 1999.
Well, now what about the silver rounds?
I like them. You can get them about $1 an ounce cheaper than the silver eagles. It's the same silver, probably. It's just as good. It's just that the eagles are so highly favored, people just love them. But what I tell people is any form of silver you buy today, you're going to be deliriously happy with them, you know, a year from now. So I would say get a little bit of all of them.
Okay, Roger, anything else?
No, that answers all my questions, and God bless you guys, and thank you so much for the information. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Roger. Okay. Let's go to Randall, who's calling from Tennessee. Hi, Randall.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. I was wondering about silver and gold. I've been thinking about buying some for a long time. How do you know you're getting the genuine product? I mean, that you doesn't have to be so many carats in the gold?
Well, when you buy gold, you need to buy the coins that are produced by the different countries. The U.S., United States makes something called the U.S. Eagle.
Yes.
They have four different sizes. Canada makes the maple leaf. South Africa makes the Krugerrand. So all of those are, you're going to get what you bought. Now, if you bought some odd bar produced by a no-name company, you know, you just want to avoid doing that. Just buy your gold and silver in a form that you know it's legit.
You're seeing a lot of advertisements on TV. I'm pretty well discounted that altogether. I mean, there's always, of course, you know, I see advertisement pretty much is propaganda anyway, especially something like that.
Well, I will tell you, Randall, you've really got to be careful because there are a lot of sharks in the water. If they're advertising on TV, that takes a lot of money. So they got to make a lot of money on commission to pay for the TV.
Yes, sir.
You've got to have somebody you trust. And you shop around, you check with two or three sources, and you hope that that the people you're dealing with are honest. I mean, I wouldn't have the people on my program. I hadn't checked them out beforehand to make sure they were. I'll have to admit that I have had one or two people on my programs, and of course, certainly Ron Brown does help to support Radio Liberty, as do the other people who are on here. But every one of them, as far as I know, is honest, or I wouldn't have them here, because I'm responsible to you out there in the listening audience, and anybody who ever gets cheated, I want them to let me know, but I don't think you'll ever have any trouble with any of the people I have.
According to what's been said about the currency, it seems to me like that, according to that, everything you've got should go into silver or gold.
Well, you know, the prudent man rule says you don't put everything in one basket, but when people tell me how to invest their money, you start off with a minimum of 25% in gold and silver, and then they say, where do you put the rest? And say, I don't know.
Right. I mean, I think that, Randall, certainly gold and silver, yes, would be the basis. There are certain gold and silver stocks, which are probably going to do pretty well. You diversify, because you don't want all your eggs in one basket, just in case somebody sits on the basket. But certainly I believe that things are tied to commodities that have inherent value are the only thing that's going to survive at all.
Mm. The fiat currency system is just paper.
When you have a system that's a fiat money system, there's no instance in all history where they've survived. And we have a great little pamphlet called The History of Money, and another DVD on certainly the coming financial crisis. There's no question in my mind we're on the very edge of some very serious problems for America. And after all, if you look at it spiritually, is there any country that's ever turned against God where God has not withdrawn his protection from that country?
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, you can't, if you go against the Maker, I mean, he's no longer with you.
Amen to that. Okay.
Multiple. Thank you, sir.
Thanks very much for calling, Randall. That was Randall calling from Tennessee. Well, we just got a couple of minutes more here with Ron as we sort of summarize what's going on. And if you have a chance to get on the Internet, go to Ron Paul's website. Just Google in Congressman Ron Paul go to his website, and it will be his last talk, at least this week. The talk he gave on the floor of the House of Representatives on what's happening to our monetary system. Fascinating insight, an excellent overview of what's happening, and an ominous conclusion as to the future of our country financially if we don't get back to a solid monetary system. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Again, our guest this evening is Ron Brown, and we've got Jim calling, and they'll just pass him through. Why we'll talk to Jim. I don't know where he's from, but hi, Jim, where are you from?
I was just from Santa Cruz.
Oh, okay, Jim, go ahead.
I just wondered in terms of scenarios, if it's going to be our major American banking and other institutions that are going to actually lead the way in dumping the dollar when things become critical.
What do you think about that, Ron?
Well, I think we're approaching a showdown where the dollar is going to be rejected worldwide. Then everyone will start trying to defend themselves from the collapse of money. Here's what I do believe. For most people over 40 or 50 years old, we've been through all sorts of ups and downs in the economy. We've seen real estate up and down two or three times. We've seen stocks up and down and so forth. But the point I don't think many people grasp is that this time what is collapsing is the very monetary system. See, through all those other cycles, the monetary system was intact. We still had a central bank. We still had the Fed. We still had a dollar that was basically the same dollar as it was, maybe less valuable. But this time around, the system itself is what's collapsing. And I think the very banks that you mentioned are the ones that are pushing for a world central bank. And so, yes, at some point, the flight out of the dollar will hit a panic point, and then we have to call a monetary emergency and have some type of monetary reform, which would be probably some type of world central bank if these guys have their way.
And I think really what they want to do is take us into a cashless society so we can be controlled. So we will neither buy nor sell unless we have, of course, their system using their electronic system and some sort of a marker. They'll probably have to give you some sort of a chip so they'll know who you are. And this has almost prophetic implications. Anything else, Jim?
That's all. Thanks, guys.
God bless. Good to hear from you. Okay, that was Jim calling from Santa Cruz. Well, we're just about out of time. As always, it's a fascinating time to talk to Ron Brown. And Ron, I want you to give your telephone number one more time.
Okay, that's 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561.
All right, fine. Well, I appreciate your coming on with us, and we'll look forward to having you back with us again next month as we watch this incredible story unfold. And, of course, just as Greece was destroyed because of lack of monetary restraint, and Rome was destroyed by lack of monetary restraint, why could it happen here? Well, Ron, are you still with us?
I'm still here.
All right, just give your telephone number out just one more time.
Okay, just 1-800-595-0561.
One more time.
1-800-595-0561. Good. Just feel free to call me. I'll be glad to talk to you about anything we've discussed.
Good night. We'll look forward to talking to you next month.
Okay.
Good night.
My pleasure, Dr. Sam.
Okay, fine. That was Ron Brown. I always enjoy talking to Ron. He's got his feet solidly on the ground. And certainly, I've been very, very pleased dealing with him personally. Well, under any circumstances, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you agree with me that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield, why, we'd love to hear from you, and hopefully you'd want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. I've written a little pamphlet. It's called The History of Money. It's basically five newsletters I've written on the subject of the history of money. It was interesting. I was at a rather large meeting this last weekend with a number of very prominent people, and we were passing out free copies of my various pamphlets we've written, and the one that moved best was the History of Money. If you'd like to get that, of course, we can't offer it to you free, but if you'd like to get a copy of my pamphlet on the history of money and the DVD we've done, The Coming Financial Crisis, why give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. You can give us a call at that telephone number. We carry books like The Creature from Jekyll Island, Fiat Money, Inflation in France, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton, Gold for Survival, Gold for Investment, both by Professor Sutton. They give you an understanding of the things we're talking about. You need to understand that we have a central bank, and all of the central banks of the world work together in concert to control the economies of their respective countries. Behind the central banks of the world are the powerful forces that I refer to as the Brotherhood of Darkness. And there is a spiritual component to everything that is going on today. And you remember the story, of course, when Christ was on the Mount of Temptation with the devil, who offered to give him control over all the nations of the world if he had simply bowed down and worshiped him. How could the devil make that option, that offer? Because he controlled all the governments of the world 2,000 years ago, and I believe he controls them all today. I believe at one time America was a Christian nation, but this is no longer the case. I believe since the very inception of this country, there have been powerful occult forces here that one day intended to use America's wealth and military power to bring about control over the world. And I believe that's exactly what's happening today. And they are moving us towards World War III. And so our plea to you is to find out what's going on. Begin making preparations, fiscally, financially, but spiritually as well. And then help us educate the people across America. Again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Our website, RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until we're together again, may the Lord be with you.